You come for what? Advice on being whore?
I do need advice on that.
Out of my sight. Disgusting.
Okay, so this is the podcast for the Museum of the Vanishing Dog. My name is Liz Hamilton. Your name is Sam Hensley.
Allegedly.
We work as curators for the museum, so we talk about how we're going to change, update, expand an exhibition that's in the museum, and how we're going to do that and why. This week is Sam's week, so you're going to tell us something terrible. I wanted to say before we get into it that our podcast news is that we should, by the time this comes out, be on Stitcher and iTunes and Google Podcasts. We've just been on Spotify up until now, but by the time you're listening to this, that's where we should also be. So if you have friends who don't do Spotify, which is wild, you can let them know that we're also on those platforms. It took kind of a level of incompetence and laziness that made it happen so late, but I fixed it. It's all right. So you got any news before we get into it?
Oh my god.
Anything interesting?
What is new? Yeah, there's not even news anymore. It's just disclaimers. I have disclaimers.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's the only thing that can be had now. Nothing happens. I just have to warn people about things. Today's disclaimers. I probably am going to do offensively bad European accents. I'm okay with it too. I think offensive accents are fine as long as they're European. That's my hot take.
Yeah,
I think
I agree.
Like the one time. Oh my god.
Yeah.
If I make a Bulgarian person mad, first of all, what a flex that Bulgarians listen to this.
When do you want me to tell my story about my cat time traveling me? Should we save it for the end?
Should we? Cat time travel stories.
Yeah, it was maybe another dimension. I don't really know. But he did that through dream sauce.
Oh, man. Yeah, we'll save it for the end. I feel like that's a nice...
Okay.
Just because, like, that's going to keep people hanging around through the grueling process I'm about to put people through talk for
an
hour.
It's a sweet little story.
The other disclaimer.
It's a sweet little story that I would like to say is not a bit and something that I truly believe.
Oh my god. I know that. Being your friend, I know that deep in my heart. But they might not. And it is really true. I can verify. Next to me, I have... How many ounces is this delightful mason jar that I'm having my Caucasian beverage out of? This is like a 32-ounce... White Russian.
That seems fine.
There's only a small amount of alcohol in it because I'm a baby.
Sure.
But the reason I have it is because I'm going to play a little drinking game for this story. I learned from Wikipedia during this research what the term weasel words means. Do you know what weasel words are, Liz?
No, weasel words? What are they?
Well, some people say they're just fine.
What?
Allegedly, there's no problem with them at all. Weasel words, in a research context, are when you say things that absolve you of any inaccuracies that you're going to share. And a lot of what I share with you today might be complete bullshit, because that's just what happens when you try to research topics within the occult. So I'll be saying a lot of things like, allegedly, according to some, by certain accounts, and it's possible that. And every time every time I will be doing that, I will be taking a small sip of my White Russian.
Excellent.
So, let's begin.
I wish I had my new stuffed weasel here so we could have her enter the game, but she hasn't arrived in the mail yet.
I wish she did, too. A venerable addition to the museum's collection of singular ugly stuffed weasel.
I'm gonna make her a little hat.
Oh my god, wait, I have a tiny hat. I have a tiny straw hat right here. I'll cut this out.
No, don't cut it out. I want people to know that you're pulling out like a little dollhouse hat. That it was just something that you had at the ready.
Yeah, that it's like American Girl doll size.
It's pretty small, right?
Yeah. I'm going to guess most of these tiny things were purchased at the American Dollhouse Museum, a favorite place of ours.
Unfortunately, no. They're from another really cool place that I'll shout out. It's called The Waste Shed. It's a thrift store in Chicago. It's all art supplies. And if you're a teacher, they will give you free supplies.
That's nice.
It's a wonderful place.
And your art supply was a tiny hat?
A very, very small hat that I ripped from the hands of the prospective children who could learn from it. Yeah.
Good.
I'm no teacher. I go there. I clean them out of all their miniature supplies.
That's pretty fun. Yeah.
And this little bird that I am going to send to you in the mail.
Oh, I love it.
I got
it.
This for you.
Thank you.
It's a horrible little crow.
I love a crow.
Yeah, for those who can't see. It's really goofy.
You mean anyone except me, anyone on our Skype chat who can't see what you're
holding. I said that like there's people here. The studio audience.
That's right.
The studio audience is the ants that live in my room, inexplicably.
Yuck.
Okay. Okay, ceiling bats.
Yeah, I guess that's fair.
Liz's ceiling is full of bats.
Yeah. It's a bat. It's full of baby bats. It's a bat nursery. They're breeding up there and they'll fall through the vents.
In that case, you're probably tax exempt. I feel like that's probably like a business at that point.
Bat breeding?
Yeah, you're a nursery.
The rat collector came to look at them the other day. He said we still can't. The rat reaper who comes and collects his rat harvest.
Yeah. Didn't you say you were going to give me to him for a dowry?
Yes, I was. We had this rat man who used to come to our house, again, to collect his harvest. And he would collect them all in a clear plastic bag and then have very long conversations about the history of the circus with me.
Wow.
While holding a huge sack of fetid rats.
So sexy.
I did not like the rat man, but he sounded like he might be Sam's soulmate.
I haven't met him yet, but I am to understand that I've been married off to him, so.
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry, ladies, he's taken.
Sorry.
Okay, so we're starting in our office. I guide you out into the hallways of our vast museum, empty except for us, open to the public someday, hopefully.
When we're done working on it,
when we're dead. Next to the entrance of one of our restrooms is an unmarked door. You've walked by it countless times because you go to the bathroom so often.
Because I have a medical problem.
But this time, it's slightly ajar. Bright light shines through the gap between it and the floor. When you get close, you can feel a warm breeze emitting from the opening. Upon entering the room, you are first only able to see bright light. Compared to the dim interior of the museum, the outdoors are suddenly jarring. You blink several times. When you adjust, you realize you aren't outdoors at all. The daylight is artificial, produced by fixtures above you. The ceiling is painted with soft clouds, and the walls around you are painted with pastoral mountain ranges, not unlike those in the Sound of Music.
Love it. Very excited.
The grass under your feet seems like it must be real. A clothesline weighted with delicate linens wavers in a breeze that comes from an unidentifiable source. Chickens cluck contentedly nearby, but you can't see them. The room isn't small, but it's just barely big enough for the cottage that occupies its center.
Excellent.
It's built of dark pine wood. It has an asymmetrical roof and big windows. Every sill and surface is crowded with flower pots and vines. It's unabashedly beckoning and story-like. Chimes trickle, a quiet tune, and water babbles. Distant birdsong can be heard. Lavender and yellow petunias grow in abundance. The air is sweet with them. Between you and the house is a shallow pool that bubbles from its floor. When you put your foot in, you can feel through your shoe that the crystal clear water is as hot as fresh tea. It steams gently. The cottage is by no means humble, but the porch is small. On the door hangs a sign with stark black lettering. It reads, Subject, Institute of Suggestology.
Oh!
The door creaks open at a touch. It wasn't even closed all the way. Inside, a cluttered but warm and well-lit home. More plants. Every trapping of a grandmotherly place. Furniture is draped in soft pastel crochets. Porcelain adores the walls and shelves. It's clean. The light from the windows falls on a dining table with a lace runner, setting it aglow. A tea set and a table setting. A bottle with amber fluid in it, some glasses, and, in a crystal candy dish, several sugar cubes. Do you approach the table?
Yeah, because I want to eat the sugar cubes like a horse.
Do you reach out and grab a sugar
cube? Obviously.
Yeah. The moment you touch the sugar cube, the entire cottage springs to astonishing life, scaring you much too much to eat it. The artificial lights outside cut abruptly, and it's night. Confusing images begin to glow and move on every wall and surface. You realize that projectors are hidden in every corner of the room. Documentary clips of great tragedies, family home videos, animals, and what appear to be strange extraterrestrial beings surround you. I invite you to get comfortable and take a seat.
I don't think I can get comfortable.
This is your reality now. Voices begin to speak.
Okay.
The surround sound makes it feel like the whole house is addressing you personally. It's an interview. This is the part where I ask you to refer to the script I've given you.
Okay, so which one am I reading?
You're going to be K.
Okay, and do I have a character, or do you just want me to read it
You're
normally?
Just a woman talking to a woman.
Okay.
And I'm just a woman that is talking to God.
Okay, so this is the script that we're hearing while we're sitting
emanating
in the cottage,
as
right?
if it is coming both from the walls of the house and our own mind, yes.
Okay. All right. Let me start. Do you see specific faces, appearance, picture, situation?
Yes.
How do you see individuals' future?
Just like in a movie film.
Can you read people's thoughts?
Yes.
From what distance can you reach those thoughts?
Distance doesn't matter.
How do you read the thoughts of foreigners? Are there any language barriers?
No language barriers.
If you predict misfortune or death, can it be changed or prevented?
Nobody can prevent those events.
What about for whole groups, towns, countries?
No, it cannot be prevented.
Do the events of every human life depend on the individual's strength? And can he change those events?
No. Everybody follows a path that is very strictly set.
How do you define the main problem of every vision? Or visitor?
An image appears, and I hear a voice.
Do you think that your clairvoyant skills were programmed by superior powers?
Yes.
Who? Do you see them?
Yes. They look like transparent figures, just like the man sees his reflection in water.
Can they materialize?
No.
Is your desire or theirs to establish a contact?
It is usually theirs.
Are humans comprised of three interconnected matters? Etheric, physical, and mental?
Yes.
How do you see the deceased?
With image and voice.
When talking to a deceased person, is he asking questions or only answers?
Both.
Is personality kept after we die?
Yes.
How do you perceive death?
Only as a physical end.
Which is stronger, the biological or the spiritual relationship?
The spiritual is stronger. As the narration continues, images flick on and off throughout the house, illustrating the words being spoken. The voice you hear answering is that of Baba Vanja, one of the most influential prophets of the modern era.
Baba Vanja.
To many, she is seen as a saint, or as the Nostradamus of the Balkans. Unlike many great prophets, she was not born with this gift. She was born January 31st, premature, nameless, and dangerously ill, in the town of Strumica, then part of the dissolved Ottoman Empire. Per local tradition, she wasn't named until it was thought she'd survive. A family member then ran into the street and asked the first passerby for a name. And then the second passerby, because the first suggestion was deemed, quote, too Greek. Which seems probably racist or something. Not going to try to unpack that. Oops, the second suggested a Greek name as well, but I guess they gave up and took it because she was christened Vangelia Pandeva Dimitrova. She lived as any normal country girl would until she was 12. At this break in the story, an aggressive artificial wind begins to beat at the doors and windows. You can hear rain, maybe hail, pelting the roof. A great horrible storm lifted Vangelia from the ground into the sky and threw her far away. The search for her, or more likely her body, took days. When her family finally found her, she was miraculously alive and in one piece, except for her eyes. They were packed so- phrase that insensitively. They were packed so tightly with dust and dirt that she could not even attend. No, that part's not funny. Okay. You're fucked up for that one. No, she's fine. It's just her eyes are gone. She's perfectly fine. They were packed so tightly with dust and dirt that she could not even attempt to open them without yelling in agony.
Okay, sorry.
Her poor farming parents could only afford the most spare of surgeries. She lived and avoided terrible infection, but she was completely blind. This wasn't the only change, though. Another voice plays. It's Baba's. After the big storm, when I got blind, I was crying every night, and I was praying to God to not leave me helpless, a burden on my poor family. He heard my prayers. This gift is given to me by God. He took my human eyesight away, but he gave me other eyes with which I can see the whole visible world and the invisible world. Soon after returning home from her surgery, her father lost a sheep from his flock. Instantly, Vangelia knew where it was.
So she got, like, sheep eyes.
Yeah, she had horizontal pupils now.
Cool.
Just kidding. As we can see from pictures, she did not have eyes. It's like she's always sleeping and there's no eyes there. They're always closed. Though it was too far to be seen, even on a physical level, Baba claimed she could see the sheep perfectly clear from within herself. A ghostly flickering sheep navigates its way through the kitchen and out the door in front of you, where the storm has now faded to a soft but persistent rain. Her family sent her to a school for the blind several years after this, where she learned many skills, especially knitting, a craft in which she became a notorious hand. Notorious hand at knitting. Why do I write like this? She only ever gained the most base functional knowledge of Braille. Never really enough to read the paper or keep up with current events, but, you know, read signs and stuff. Mm-hmm. I note this for later. For a few years after this, Vangelia lived the normal Bulgarian country life of the early 20th century. She returned home to take care of her step-siblings and carry out farm labor. She contracted pleurisy, and for the third time in her life, it was thought that she'd surely die. Again, she did not. This period of her life is largely devoid of record. Her special abilities were known, but not particularly acknowledged yet. Perhaps she was scared of them. Then World War II began. Europe was, of course, beset by vast suffering and strife, the kind of time when people grasp for any answers they can find. And Baba's little cottage began to have visitors. First, it was just the families of lost soldiers, hoping they could receive salvation or closure on the whereabouts of their sons. But as repute of her abilities grew, the feet of dignitaries, celebrities, and monarchs began to grace her doorstep. Her penchant for herbal Her penchant for herbal remedies and strange healing rituals also became known. She was gaining practical sainthood.
So we're having echoes of Nino Fidencio and the necessity of prophets during times of political unrest.
Very much so. I thought about him a lot while I researched this. It wasn't long until hundreds of people were visiting her home each day. The weather outside is bright and clear again. All the projectors are off, but surround sound plays voices and footsteps. The binaural audio makes them shockingly real. You could swear the room is crowded with people. Two quotes from Baba play. When somebody is in front of me, I have the feeling that a window opens up in my head through which I see pictures from the person's life. It comes in front of my eyes, just like a movie film. Above me, I hear a voice that tells me what to tell that person.
Yikes.
I see them moving. When a person enters my house and I take the sugar cube that they were supposed to put under their pillow, sleep over, and bring to me, I start seeing images. They move from left to right. These are live images of places, people, whole events, accidents. Sometimes they are so many and moving so fast that I can hardly manage to tell what I am seeing, and I can't stop them.
So what I'm getting is that my initial strong desire to eat a sugar cube like a horse was actually that I wanted to, like, read the future, that I wanted prophecy?
Yes.
Okay. I just wanted to check.
Just like horses.
Can horses do that? Is that why they're so distracted?
That's why they are the way that they are. Horses yeah. know so much that we don't.
I've met horses who knew virtually nothing.
I knew a horse named Smokey back in the day who would fall asleep while he was walking and fall and hurt himself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If he didn't walk fast enough, he would just fall asleep because he was bored, and then he would hit his head on the ground.
A horse I helped to train and hang out with used to only walk backwards down the dotted line in the middle of the road.
All the time?
He was like a character from Twin Peaks. He would get in these moods, and then, like, that was the only way he would move was backwards, and his favorite way to walk was backwards down the middle of a road. He almost killed me several times.
He could probably see the future. He was like, I can't let this podcast happen.
Oh, he was not afraid of snakes or cliffs, but of everything else.
The visions yeah. pass and then disappear. That is why I ask people what they have come to me for. To seek advice for an illness, for something lost, to get a job, to conceive a child. This way I can tell them what is of interest to them. Otherwise I can miss something important. And they blame me for asking questions. I only tell what I can see. I don't make it up. Sometimes a person would come to me, but I can't see anything. And I send them away, tell them I can't help them. And they get angry, say they were waiting for months on end, have paid to see me. But there is nothing I can do. When I can't see anything, I can't lie, can I?
How spooky to not have any visible future.
Very. Are those people who, like, right? trip and fall and, like, break their skull when they're leaving her house? Like, there's just
right.
nothing.
Yeah. I would find that very disturbing.
The second part of this quote highlights a special element of Baba's practice that I've never heard of anywhere else. Those who entreated her were expected to sleep with a single sugar cube under their pillow the night before they saw her. She would then, quote, use it as a crystal to focus energy and receive information.
Wild.
The wildest thing ever. I really like it.
Can we sell prophecy sugar cubes in the gift shop, please?
In a little bag. Oh my god, yes. Yeah. Yes, 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 absolutely. Definitely not insensitive in any way, and totally fine, I think.
Come on, for prophecies.
But they have to be in cute little branded baggies that have a picture of Baba giving, like, two thumbs up.
Yeah, obviously.
And it's just like, it really works.
You're gonna die.
You'll die. You will be dead soon. Short of life. So sad.
Maybe, like, when you open the bag and the, like, cardboard holder that's attached to the top will have your prophecy written on the underside, like a popsicle stick.
Yeah! Oh, fun!
Yeah.
And then you eat the sugar cube and you have an actual vision of, like,
yeah.
when your loved ones will die in front of you.
Yeah, or someone else's loved or ones, someone just else's. To make it more fun. Like, you'll just be haunted by the specter of someone's uncle dying, but you don't know the uncle.
Yeah.
Tragedy strikes like lightning, you know?
I just want people to have fun souvenirs from the museum.
Oh, they will. I really like the sugar cube idea. The sugar would absorb a specific person's energies, it seemed, allowing her to narrow the cacophony of information she constantly received down to a single point. And her ability to interpret those energies seems miraculous. A quote from someone who paid visit to her. A military man from Dimitrovgrad. He was bringing a sugar cube from his wife who wasn't well. Baba Vanga touched the sugar and shouted, "Your wife is not sick. She is stubborn and very nervous. You are sick. Go to a doctor and check your kidneys because you are not well. And your wife should go on a vacation."
Okay. Can we also have a prophecy sugar for husbands that just says, like, give your wife $40 and then that's it?
Get a new kidney. Give your wife a back rub. Stop drinking.
You look weird today.
Yeah. You look bad. Your wife's cool, though. I like that. And those are marketed only to husbands. Yes. It is in this parade of seekers that a man named Dimitar Gushtarov entreated Baba to reveal the name of his brother's killer. She refused to do so until he promised not to seek vengeance, because she said it was pointless. Not long after, they became man and wife, and were married until Dimitar's death.
He married Baba Vanga, or he married his brother's killer?
True. My bad. He married Baba Vanga.
Oh, okay, okay. Because, like, that's certainly the opposite of revenge, I think.
That is. Or is it exactly what revenge is?
Oh, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Baba never remarried. This part of the story gets a little more convoluted, but we'll wrap back around to it later. In addition to droves of families bereaved by war, Baba was visited by the Bulgarian king Boris III, multiple undisclosed members of the communist elite, and even, allegedly...
She's drinking.
Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev. All seeking answers, political and personal. Accounts of these visits likely don't exist. I couldn't find them. They were matters of state secrecy. This patronage put Baba at a crux of power. While the communist government that Baba lived under persecuted fortune tellers as a rule, she was largely exempt from their discouragement, which was unusual. In fact, she may qualify as the only state-sponsored oracle of modern times.
Wild.
For the second half of her career, she had a large government salary, a paid driver, a security guard, and caretakers. She was also the subject. Huh. Yeah, she was also the subject of official, though dubious, study. This is the reason for the dubious. That's a weasel word. I could not corroborate so many of these sources, but like, they're so specific. They didn't seem like complete bullshit, or I would have given up right on the topic. Like, there was enough truth to the topic that it makes the things that might not be true still very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This is the reason for the odd sign on her door, the one reading subject, Institute of Suggestology. The institute was founded by Bulgarian scientist Georgi Lazalnov in the interest of accelerated learning. The meditative learning methods he cultivated were endorsed by UNESCO, and he is considered a great voice in the field of parapsychology, which is good, I guess.
Okay.
I didn't find his name until close to like the end of yesterday, so I didn't. He is like a real person. I at least verified that, but I couldn't do much reading into like the rest of his research as a whole because he sounds very interesting. He's kind of like internationally regarded by people who believe in things like biofeedback and visualization. He's a big name.
Yeah
whatever. But
well, let's put him on the list for later.
Yeah, I feel like that's its own entire rabbit hole. But he studied Baba Vanga, mm-hmm. And after a long study on her, he concluded that her predictions were 80 to 85% accurate. A figure I've seen reported in
that's pretty good.
Yeah, that figure is referred to in a lot of writing about her, though without credit to him. Nikolay Stoyanov, a writer featured on her website, alleges.
Weasel words.
That Lazanov was later hounded by the Bulgarian government and died after being put on house arrest for a decade and having his research completely destroyed. So,
bummer.
They didn't like him, and they didn't like that he was researching her and getting heavily involved in her affairs like they were. The story is insane, but a lot of it is corroborated just enough to make my scalp itch. That's just a fun little detail in my notes. Another single source that I couldn't verify in any way says that she was, just once, jailed for predicting the rise of communism in Europe. This was, assumably, before the coup that made Bulgaria a communist state. She was shortly released after the government received wide ridicule for taking an old woman seriously. Which sounds really true.
So was she, so like, for her, were they prophecies? Or like, what do you call them? Because they seem to be individual, but like, were they also of like, future?
Yeah, so far I've only shared her very specific and individual prophecies, but she also had ones that were like, on a national level that I'll get into later. Okay. And then also like, a lot that were just more like, spiritual guidance bestowed from above that's more vague and lifestyle oriented.
Cool.
I've got a whole list of it further into these okay. notes here. And then a lot of it's just not recorded. There's a lot of references to things she predicted, but like no quote from her on it. So it's hard to say. There's like vast amounts of information she shared that's just permanently lost because she wasn't very literate.
Because she had dirt eyes.
Well, she had dirt eyes and her family couldn't afford to school her fully. She made out just fine, though. She was a wealthy and well-to-do woman because of her special inside eyes.
I had a cat who lost an eye. Do you think she could read the future?
Probably. Most of your animals seem to be able to.
She's the one who got a cactus spike up her nose and sneezed blood all over the couch once.
Well, she didn't see that coming. Or she did, and that was to spite you.
That's possible.
If this arrest was before 1944, her prediction was likely in reference to the communist coup of the Kingdom of Bulgaria, aka the People's Uprising of September 9th. So they probably felt pretty dumb. Relatives of Baba also account that her house was heavily wiretapped. If true, she was clearly seen as a powerful force that could act for or against the state. Svetla Todorova is a Bulgarian atomic physicist and another scientist fascinated by the prophetess. She states that Baba, as well as all intelligent and honest people, are surrounded by IBBs, intelligent bodiless Ooh. Beings.
Oh, I for sure am.
You totally are. Oh my gosh. They radiate powerful energy that can be used for divining and healing, but they need the assistance of a pure and noble human for it to impact our physical world. This is supposedly how Baba Vanga did her work. Baba Vanga did her work. I'm going to have to edit this so much. I can't read.
No, it's fine.
I have dirt eyes also. And I can't read.
I've got dirt eyes. Feed me a sugar cube.
The IBBs made me think a lot about my own work and how it's about, like, drawing entities from alternate realities. And, I wonder if it's kind of seen as, like, crass and lowbrow that I intentionally give them bodies. Mm. Like, is that rude, I wonder? They're like, wow, we're kind of, like, above physicality, and then you just go and give us these, like, bodies made out of thrift store fabric. A little rude.
I know, she keeps making us all soft and wet.
No, they approach me. It's as they wish.
Yeah.
But that did make me think
For sure.
It. These beings, at turns described as interdimensional and as extraterrestrial, are especially fascinating to me. The house darkens around you to nighttime again, and projected stars fill the surfaces of the room. Wavering bipedal forms shift and flicker, always in your peripherals, no matter where you turn your head. An eerie choir begins to sing, not quite human in character. It starts almost too quietly to hear, and increases ever so slowly in volume until it's just audible. This may be my favorite Baba-attributed quote that I found in all my research. I have been seeing them for about a year. They are transparent. They look just like a mirror reflection from water. They have clothing that resembles armor, and it shines like fish scales. It seems there are females among them as well. Their hair looks like seaweed, and it is soft as a duck's down, and it surrounds their heads like a halo. Sometimes they have something like wings at the back. Very often, when I go back to my home in the town of Petrick, I find them sitting in my room, and I talk with them. Sometimes from a distance, before I reach my door, I hear slow sounds, something like a melody, as if a choir is singing psalms. They tell me that they come from the planet Vamfim, or at least this is how I hear it, and that it is the third planet from Earth. They don't tell me third from which side, and at the same time I can't understand them. Every once in a while, one of them grabs my hand and takes me to their planet. We walk on a ground that is strewn with stars, as if we are trampling on it. Those that take me there are moving very fast with jumps. They go, and then they come back. On their planet, everything is very beautiful. It has a wonderful nature. It can't really be described. I just don't know why I didn't see any houses anywhere. Those beings, or aliens, I don't know how to call them, are very strict. When they talk, their voices ring like an echo. Sometimes they put something like earplugs on my ears. On their planet, the whole society is extremely well organized, and they work very hard. Those beings are telling me that I am their most direct connection with Earth. They communicate with only a few other people from our planet.
Huh. You guys are gonna lose your shit when we do our angel episodes.
Yeah, that was, like, my first note about that excerpt. First of all, like, this one, more so than some of her other quotes, rings with a lot of, like, weird truth to me. Like, it just sounds very much like something she actually said. It's worded very personally. There's a lot of voice to it. And obviously these figures sound very angel-like. I almost am surprised that she didn't connect to that, because she is a very Christian, biblical person. She refers to the Bible a lot. So I was surprised that she doesn't just refer to them as angels.
Huh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's very odd. She never claims to speak to angels at all. She always calls them, like, figures, entities, extraterrestrials. She never refers to them as angels.
Huh.
The way she addresses their language, like, the, at least that's how I hear it, also is, like, very honest. Like, it's like she's understanding them on a level that's past language, and it's only partially effective.
Yeah.
And it just makes it feel very compelling. Also, I note the similarity between the word they used, Vamfim, and Seraphim, and Nephilim. I think all of those kind of have the same syllabic structure and primary sounds. And maybe, yeah, it just makes me think, like, maybe Baba and the hands that wrote the Old Testament are all trying to interpret the same unknowable word given to them, perhaps, by the same entities.
Yeah.
That's just a little Sam theory. I didn't read that anywhere. That's just me being mentally ill.
Yeah. No, for real. Our angel episodes are going to be so unwell.
Someone will call the doctor. What's the word when, like, they... What's the number code for when they just immediately send someone to your house?
Oh, I can't remember.
There's, like, a specific number for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Another quote from her on extraterrestrials. We are not alone on this planet. An extraterrestrial intelligence exists, and humans will make contact one day. Hungarians will be the first to contact citizens from another planet. This will happen no sooner than 200 years from now.
Hmm.
I'm not sure when she said that, but it's probably still going to be a while.
Yeah.
I want the audience to know that I watched an entire episode of Ancient Aliens just trying to find more sources on this part of her life, because that's how much I love you. Obviously, I learned absolutely nothing from it, so don't worry, it isn't and will never be a cited source on this podcast.
I assume you just got filled with such a palpable rage that you screamed incoherently at your television, because that's what happens when,
It's so stupid. It's so racist. Dumb. It's so racist and stupid and dumb.
Yeah. Oh, my unofficial plug for this week is,
I've mentioned Colin Dickey like 5 times on this podcast, but he just wrote a new book called Unidentified about cryptids and aliens in America. And the whole first part is all about ancient aliens and Eric von Daniken and Madame Blavatsky.
Roasting him?
Yeah, obviously.
And roasting Madame Blavatsky? I mean, she was kind of a hack sometimes.
Yeah, but, well, it's all about the ways that conspiracy theories use, like, fake science to sound real.
Yeah.
But it's really, really, really good. So I would strongly suggest
I'm gonna
that if you
that.
Like what we do, you pick that up. I sent Sam a copy of the mail.
Oh, that's the one you sent me.
Yes. It's extremely good. I like him so much. And that is not an official plug. Just, I'm a big fan.
Yeah. That sounds really good. Yeah, Ancient Aliens, however, is so,
the opposite.
So dumb. Just another of many dead ends that I found in pursuit of information on Baba Vanga. What you can also find is a lot of, like, really weird YouTube videos on her. Like, conspiracy YouTube is, like, so sick and twisted and, like, incomprehensible. And just suffice to say that all of those are bullshit. Just from the sources that I've looked at, like, that are a little more credible, the things they say in the YouTube videos about her are, like, 90% just made up.
Are they trying to, like, Nostradamus her? Like, take
Things
that she said and, like, connect it to events?
Absolutely. Exactly that.
Gotcha.
Like, something that I'll get to later, even her family, like, publicly, her family and neighbors publicly denounced was people, like, using her as a hand puppet to further political agendas by just saying bullshit and then saying that she said it.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Stuff like, well, Baba Vanga said that Obama's evil. Like, did she? I don't know if she did. The constant stream of voices projected into Baba seemed to plague her as much as bless her. She admitted to preferring positive predictions, though they were less common. The constant presence of future divorces, deaths, illness, and tragedies weighed heavy in her mind. She complained that the voices constantly urged her to deliver her messages, even waking her up from sleep so that she could rush into the street and deliver a prediction. I surmise that the sugar cubes are because of this. They did not facilitate predictions, but narrowed them so that for a moment she could focus on a specific person. Sometimes the amount of tragic news she felt compelled to deliver was so unbearable she would word things cryptically to avoid upsetting people. This may seem dishonest and wrong, but she does purport, again, that her predictions could almost never be prevented or changed unless God willed it. Here's an example, and like many in this exhibit, it's a first-hand account from the book Prophecies of Vanga by Zini Kostadinova, found on a supposedly official website about her called babavanga.com. babavanga.com. She used to say, if I tell some people everything that I see and know, they will want to end their lives at once.
I can't get over the idea of, like, if you were speaking to angel aliens, but the only things they were telling you were, like, that guy's gonna get a divorce. Like, that's a really weird, do you know what I mean?
The way I interpret it, I think, like, because I'll get to her more grand predictions, I think it's more like they were kind of constantly barraging her with all-knowingness, and her human mind could only handle, for most of the time, she could only handle the level of, like, interpersonal drama. I think that was, like, what her human mind was able to parse out of this just overwhelming stream of information that was just constantly gushing into her mind.
So it wasn't, like, just one really shitty alien being like, he doesn't have depression, he's just kind of hungry.
Yeah. Yeah, or maybe it was, like, one horrible old bitty alien that got bored and came to Earth to just ruin everybody's day with gossip. I like that. I like that interpretation.
Yeah.
Some of Baba Vanga's predictions are coded. I've pronounced her name legitimately 5 different ways. I think it's Baba Vanga.
It's fine.
It's a diminutive nickname for Vangelia, which I think is pronounced that way. So I think it's Vanga, but also every source I looked at pronounced it differently. So.
I wish I knew any Bulgarians.
anymore to ask them.
Yeah, I even looked up Bulgarian like pronunciation videos, and I have some fun Bulgarian slang at the end. Some little fun facts about Bulgarian slang. Okay. But I think it's Baba Vanja.
Okay.
Not positive, though. Some of Baba Vanja's predictions are coded, and can only be decoded when the events come true. For example, a young woman tells the following story after her visit with Baba Vanja. For many years, me and my family lived in an old, tumble-down house. Once I asked Baba Vanja, "Are we going to have a normal house like the other people do?" Baba Vanja said to me, "Yes, I see a house, but only the windows, without the foundation." I couldn't understand what that meant at the time, so I started to wait anxiously for this cool new window house, I guess. After around 2 months, when I was coming back from work, I saw a lot of smoke and dust in front of our house. I found out that our home has collapsed, because right beside it, they were building a new house, and the workers had undermined the foundation of ours. Somehow, a few of the windows from the second floor were still hanging intact.
Harsh, Baba.
Baba! You could have just said you didn't know.
Or just... no.
No, or just no. Yeah, she's very opposed to lying, but sometimes to, like, soften it, she'll just be like, "Yes, very cool new house, made of only windows.
A very open plan house.
Spacious.
Many windows, no walls."
That's so fucked. And this poor girl was like, "Wow, I can't wait for this weird new house." Also, the fact that it's because her neighbors were getting a cool new house is, like, also so sad. And, like, every part of it is so tragically awful. Like, the way she asks the question of, like, "Hey, Baba, are we ever gonna have a normal house like everybody else?" Like, every part of it's, like...
yes, house on the ground.
Dickensian tragedy. Yes, a very, very fun house. Lots of dust.
Very flat.
Special flat house. Only for special people. A lot of this reminds me of the Greek prophet Cassandra, who could predict anything but never be believed, whereas Baba Vanja's predictions seem like they're always accurate, but rarely can be decoded until they happen. A lot of the story also reminds me of Nino Fidencio, like you already pointed out. Baba's much akin to a folk saint, and even though she was alive within the last century, it's very difficult to find concrete details on her life. What do you think they would have thought of each other? Like, would they have been buddies, do you think? Would they hang out, or would they both just be, like, too impossibly bizarre to interact in any way?
They might be. I mean, Nino Fidencio was so often cited as just a straight-up weirdo that, like... like, I don't know if he would have been like, "Hey, it's a lady with no eyes."
"I like your cool no eyes."
"I like your no eyes. I'm going to attack you with a panther now."
I don't know. Nino Fidencio didn't do prophecy, though.
When making...
he just healed.
Vanja supposedly did some, like, miraculous healing, but it seems, like, very secondary to the rest of her stuff. When making predictions and speaking directly to the dead and to extraterrestrials, Baba slipped into a powerful trance state, muttering with her head thrown back. Here is a selection of her utterings while in these states. "One voice is talking to me. The sky told me. The icon of Mother Mary told me. St. John Chrysostom told me. The souls of the dead are telling me. Those powers don't leave me alone. Aliens came to talk to me. The sugar is telling me. When I touched her ring, the whole house opened in front of me, and I saw only two children. Which soul is talking at the moment? I don't know." Which, like, just the imagery of this old woman, like, with her head thrown all the way back and her, like, non-eyes twitching as she, like, mutters to herself.
I was going to say, I wish that I did that, but I don't have any proof that I don't do that.
You do. You usually forget as soon as it's over, and then I don't bring it up.
It's my trance state. I don't know.
just like, you go to this lady and you're like, will I ever get married? And her head just, her non-eyes just like roll back and she's just like, aliens come to talk to me. The sugar, it speaks. Oh, he will die soon. Yes, he will die soon.
I love it.
God, I wish I could meet her.
Well, you can. You just on the astral plane.
Well, later, someday. Yeah, in my dreams. Yeah. These days, Baba Vanya is most known for her alleged doomsday predictions.
Alleged. I love a doomsday prediction.
Allegedly.
Feeling real prescient at the moment.
Particularly that of a third world war, the fall of the United States, and a vast plague. Before I discuss the credibility of these claims, I'm just going to try to list the most interesting predictions attributed to her so far that have supposedly come true. These will play as the house returns to daylight and clear weather. Corresponding imagery can be projected on the walls. Or maybe not. I don't know if it's necessary. That's kind of a design choice. These are her supposedly true predictions. The beginning of World War II and its specific date. The date on which Tsar Boris III died, Bulgarian king from 1918 to 1943. The breakup of Czechoslovakia. The riots in Lebanon in 1968. The war in Nicaragua in 1979, the Cyprus conflict in 1974, the election of Indira Gandhi and her short after death, the breakup of the Soviet Union, the breakup of Yugoslavia, the union of East and West Germany, the election victory of Boris Yeltsin. Is that how you say his name?
Were these all, like, specific prophecies? Was she like, there's gonna be a war in Nicaragua, or she would, like... Was it more vague?
That's the very frustrating thing. These predictions are, like, repeatedly attributed to her, and people are like, yeah, she knew when that was going to happen. But, like, unlike some of the other stuff, I can't find her quote on it. Like, clearly these aren't spoken in her words. She always says stuff in, like, riddle talk, like a bridge troll. So she'd probably be like, Yugoslavia will be like two doves who don't talk to each other anymore. Like, it's probably shit like that, and they just didn't bother translating it that way. Or it's all fake.
Hey.
It's not. Hey. Definitely a lot of this is things that she said. It's just impossible to figure out what, because, well, not just, there are more sources on her than I was able to, like, get into. Mm-hmm. So much of it has not been translated out of Bulgarian. Like, some of the sources I did get into that were really good, most of the best ones were ones that I had to put through Google Translate mm-hmm. and, like, hope that I was reading correctly. Like, a few of the articles I looked at are, like, Google Translated Bulgarian articles. So, like, if I could read Bulgarian, I would probably know much more specifically.
Yeah, you slacker.
Like, how she said these things and whether they're true. The nuclear disaster in Chernobyl, the date when Stalin died. The Kursk nuclear submarine disaster, which is, in 1980, Baba said Kursk will be covered with water and the whole world will weep, claiming the disaster would happen in August 1999. The Russian sub sank in August 2000, killing everyone aboard.
Hmm.
So that's interesting. Sometimes she will say a specific date and it'll just be close enough that you're like,
eh,
we'll give her that one. I mean,
sure.
She predicted the 2004 tsunami that killed over 200,000 people, saying, a huge wave will cover a big coast covered with people and towns, and everything will disappear beneath the water. Everything will melt like ice.
Kind of vague, but I'll take it.
A lot of them are very vague, and, like, they're vague in ways where once it happens, you're like, she had to be talking about that. But, like, it's nothing that you could do anything with until it happens.
Right. Well, that's like Nostradamus and all other famous prophets.
Yeah. It's like half curse and half maybe it's bullshit, but, like, mostly curse where it's like, dang, that really... Like, it's just... I think it's more like a trait of divining that, like, you can't profit from it because that would be too much power for humans to have. That's, like, my personal mentally ill woman stance.
Well, plus,
on it is, like,
you'll learn all
it is true.
Yeah, you'll learn all about it in your mediumship class.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like, I just think, like, it's, like, universal ethics that humans can't predict the future and profit off of it.
Yeah,
that would be
fair.
Too much. Yeah. the USA attacks. Sorry, that's the way that this website phrased. The USA, the September 11th, she predicted
the USA
September
attack.
11th. This Bulgarian website phrased it really weird. She predicted September 11th, and the way she phrased this one is paraphrased in a lot of sources. This is like her most popular prediction because she spoke it just really poetically. She said, "Horror, horror. The American brethren will fall after being attacked by the steel birds. The wolves will be howling in a bush, and innocent blood will gush."
Okay.
I love that one.
I also love that one. The steel birds are specific.
Steel birds are pretty specific. And then also a lot of people made comparisons between, like, the wolves howling in a bush is, like, sounds vague and nonspecific, but then bush,
right,
is kind of a specific word.
Yeah.
Bush did 9/11.
Bush did 9/11.
Well, jokes aside, Bush allowed 9/11 to happen intentionally for profit. I don't know that I would give him the credit of, oh my god, I can't do this.
But
we'll move on.
Bush was a bad guy. I just feel like we sometimes have to reiterate that at this point when we're like, hey, remember that dumbass cowboy who used to just paint pictures of dogs? Nah, he was like a war criminal. I just have to make that clear.
I can't get, like, into my opinion on, like, 9/11 conspiracy, because that would be the rest of the podcast, but Bush was really bad, and he definitely let it happen on purpose so that he could profit off of the war. But I don't know. What do I know? I'm just, like, a silly girl, and I love to chew gum and walk to the store.
I know. He does provide weirdly eloquent messages of leadership during a crisis and our total vacuum of any responsible leadership. But, like, he did just about make blood pour out of my eyes every single day for 8 years.
I can't find a quote from her on this, but it's another, like, that her 9/11 prediction and this one are, like, the most frequently quoted. She also supposedly predicted that the 44th president of the USA would be black.
Pretty good.
Which, on that and, like, on all of these other predictions, a really interesting part of it. Like, the fact that she could make connections in world events when she didn't really have access to that information. Like, this was pre-internet. I don't know if she even had a television, honestly. I doubt she did.
Right, but she was visited by a lot of people from all over.
That's
and
true.
Politicians.
That's true, and it is. There are those that say she was very intentionally fed information. That's something that some people think for political gains, because her word was revered so heavily in Bulgaria. So maybe she was just
More savvy than she let on.
Probably. I mean, like all old women, probably vastly more savvy than she let in. Predicted global warming, saying that cold regions will become warm and volcanoes will awaken.
I guess volcanoes
aren't part of that, but this website said that they were.
Okay. Again, I'll take it.
She also said that in addition to our 44th president being African-American, that he'd also be our final president. A lot of people, exactly, a lot of people are like, well, there you go, obviously she was wrong about that one, we have to discredit everything, because she said that he'd be our final president, and he wasn't, but let's think a little more about that, like, let's not jump the gun, because if Trump pulls a Putin, and makes it legal for him to be in office for 40 years, he's only going to be remembered as a president in title, if even that. I don't know if we can say yet if he's our 45th president.
It's fine.
Then we have the predictions of Baba Vanja that have not yet come true, but may. She predicted that Rome would become the epicenter of a powerful new, quote, Muslim nation.
Unlikely, but cool.
Cool, whatever. Yeah, she didn't say that was good or bad. Fine, I mean.
Sounds like a dramatic twist for the Vatican.
It would be a big twist. Shortly before her death in 1996, she said that we would soon hear of a young French girl who inherited her gift, but there's been no lead on this yet. However, I mean, that girl would probably be, like, about our age, somewhere around our age, yeah. So she might not know yet.
Yeah, she might still have her eyes.
If you're out there and you're a French girl, you may want to try getting rid of your eyes. They might be holding you back.
They might be.
Hold me back. Yeah. You are carrying the church within yourself, she says. Every human being is having God in his soul. In the Himalayas now, they are teaching the new Messiah. He will come in the middle of the new century. A new era is beginning. The Pleiades are thinking about us the most. Some of them are already here among us, and some people see them. Do you know what that means?
Okay.
What are Pleiades?
No. I mean, isn't that a constellation?
I meant to look it up, but I forgot.
This is not good audio.
I'll cut it. No, I'm going to have to cut a lot of me forgetting how to read out of this. I've already committed to this taking a whole day to edit.
No, it just says astronomy. It's in...
Huh.
I don't know what that is. Don't know.
It's among us.
It's among us.
If you continue to treat Mother Nature like that, a day will come when different plants, vegetables, and animals will start to disappear. First, it will be the onion.
Okay.
Then garlic, pepper, and bees.
Oh, I like all those things.
Milk will become poisonous. People will sow wheat, but rye will grow.
Bummer. Rye bread's a bummer.
All of the gold will appear on the surface of the planet, but water will hide. Water will become more expensive than the black gold, and one day it will disappear. Those that are alive will eat and drink with golden utensils, but there will be no water.
Harsh!
Every nation... Very harsh. Every nation has its star that recharges it with energy. But there are exceptions. Some nations have a planet instead of a star. The new time will come, and those nations will not be able to survive. In an unusual atmosphere for them, they will choke. A nation that has a planet instead of a star will die out just like a candle dies when there is a strong wind. I don't know what that one means at
all. I like it, though.
I don't know if it's, like, I like that one a lot. I don't know if it's figural or literal. It, like, the star phraseology makes me think it's about, like, maybe celebrities or political figures, like, generational voices.
Just power.
But that's just me. Yeah, I don't know. Where is hell? Here on Earth. This is hell.
Sorry, that can be on the back packaging of the prophecy sugar cubes.
The sugar cubes. Yeah. Here are the life struggles, the sins, the failures and fall downs. You have been brought here to purge yourself, so you can go up where the light is. A time will come when people will dramatically change. I won't be alive, but I know it will happen. We all have better, more peaceful, and happier times ahead of us.
Cool.
I disagree with the hell philosophy, but I think it's very potently said.
Yeah.
I have, like, one of my, like, mentally ill obsessions is, like, getting worried that I am in hell. So I have to, like, I have to have a personal mantra of, like, you're not in hell, you're not in hell, you're not in hell.
Yeah, I don't think you are.
I don't think we are. There's mac and cheese
here. All my friends are here. It's fine.
Yeah. But when she says that, I am like, true. In addition to her many prophecies, she shared a lot of supernaturally gained wisdom. I gathered some of my favorites here. On her scare quotes official site. Drink. They are sorted by topic, so I've kept them in that order. On health. She says to sing for health. That God and modern medicine are both doing miracles, which is honestly a pretty progressive view for a prophet, because many prophets discount modern medicine. She says the cure for cancer and HIV will be made from iron. And
okay.
Like, on that, I looked up, because like they've cured like a handful of people of HIV in the last few years, and I tried to look up like how that goes on, and it was much too complicated for me. I don't know if iron is...
It wasn't just iron?
At all. It definitely wasn't just iron, but like I was like, I wonder if like some like important element of it involves iron, because that would be really exciting. But I can't read anything medical at all, or just words at all.
Yeah, doctors, send us an email.
Yeah, doctors, does iron cure HIV and cancer? let us know. Pretty fucked up that you haven't shared it yet. Big if true.
I know. What are you waiting for?
She said there are two types of diseases. Ones that are treated with home remedies, and others with medical treatments. Knowing the exact diagnosis is most important, which again is pretty progressive for like herbalists and folk healers. Because a lot of them are like, no, 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 you only need to use peppermint oil. Don't go to the doctor.
Put a fish on it.
Which is a bad stance.
Yeah.
Put a fish on it. Spit in a fish's mouth. Throw it back in the river. That's a real folk myth.
Hate it.
Those that are nervous, that are constantly scared from this and that, they are not sick. They have a mental condition. They should go visit a neurologist.
Yeah, whatever, Baba.
Yeah, okay, thanks. I get it. You're speaking directly to me. Fine. Or perhaps go relax at a mineral bath. You can't live with constant fear.
Yeah, prove it.
That one felt pretty pointed. The epilepsy is triggered as a result of fear. Don't worry, modern medicine has helped develop pills for this disease. Little by little, with the years, epilepsy disappears on its own.
I don't... Okay.
I looked that up, because I'm dumb. And, like, you can, if you're, like, if you have, like, really early diagnosed epilepsy, sometimes kids grow out of it. But, like, not all the time. You know, don't bang on it.
Not a doctor, maybe.
Maybe ask a doctor about it. People, Baba implored, why do you smoke? If this was good for the health, men and women were going to have chimneys on their heads. Stop smoking and live a longer and healthier life. I feel like she just got paid to say that. That's narc shit.
Yeah.
It's true, though, I guess. I don't know.
Whatever.
She does unfortunately connect AIDS to sinful living, so that's bad.
Boo. Kind
of, I know, she was doing so good. She was saying some oddly progressive stuff for, like, a Bulgarian folk healer born in, like, 1910, but that kind of negates it.
Yeah.
She was maybe a homophobe. Yeah. Baba Vanja, officially non-ally. But also, maybe she didn't say that. We don't know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Who knows?
Who knows? Here's some of her general advices for the website. This website's really Bulgarian.
It's my general advices.
The section of the website is called General Advices for the Life. There are no people that were born to only have happiness. One is an excellent worker, but doesn't have the peace in his family. Another has both, but doesn't have good health. Third is healthy, but his children are sick, and so on. In every man there is good and evil. This is how people are designed. This is how the world is designed. Patience is a must. Planet Earth wants to receive a gift, and for that we came to live on her. What does that... I didn't read this entire quote before I put it in here. What does that mean? To Earth, we are paying our taxes, just like we pay our taxes for our homes. Every single person pays, and for so many years now, I see how the world is organized.
How are we paying? Is it with our sadness? I can't tell.
I think that's what she's saying. I read all. I remember the taxes line, but I skipped the part where, like, Earth wanted to receive a gift, so we came to live on her. That's so cryptic.
Yeah.
You will never be happy and financially stable if you are not doing the work that is best suitable for you. You have to discover what you like to do the most and do it. Don't be enslaved by the fashion to do the work that pays the most. Or following the other's advices.
That's pretty good. Thanks, Baba.
Yeah, that's nice. Thanks, Baba. She has some interesting wisdom about nature. She says, don't pick the flowers. When you are watching them and loving them, you are getting such a relief, similar to the one that you have after you have taken a bath. When you are picking the flowers, You don't realize that they cry. It is sad to... It is sad to pick a branch from a tree or from lilac when there are no other blossoms left. How sad to pick a tulip or a snowdrop, same as if a mother lost her only child. Plants are talking to me, but there are so many, and I manage to remember so little. Flowers are living organisms that radiate energy and give strength. Judging by the way they grow and flourish in the house where they are placed, you can tell if there is love and harmony in the family. Don't give picked flowers as a gift. You are bringing sorrow to people. A picked flower cries like a little child.
Yikes.
Big yikes.
I like the idea that she could listen to flowers all the time.
Just constantly hears them screaming in agony. But like descriptions and pictures of her house show that she had like a lot of potted and planted flowers, but no cut flowers. And people would bring her cut flowers. There's I'll have to put it on the Instagram. There's one picture of her. It's not it's separated from completely from this context. I feel like nobody else has noticed this because, like, this is a really deep cut quote on her website. But, like, there's a picture of someone handing her a bouquet, like, in her later years. And she's so visibly grimacing.
Because they're going, ah!
She's just grimacing in pain in the picture, which does make me believe that quote.
Yeah, I love that.
Also, a personal aside, I honestly completely agree with the part where she says that the way flowers behave in your house reflect, like, the health of the home. Again, because I'm mentally ill, I really think that I'm a former, I think, no longer plant waterer.
Who knows now? Who knows?
I'm not sure, you know, because of the plague besetting our nation.
The unpleasantness. But,
I was, until recently, an employed caretaker for indoor office plants. And what I do notice is that, like, all these offices have the same, like, pretty poor conditions for houseplants. Like, they all have low light. I'm the only person taking care of them, like, once every 3 weeks. And if I'm not taking care of them, then there's, like, one crazy person in the office who, like, waters them a gallon every day and is and, like, comes up to me every time I come to the office and is like, oh, you're here. Don't you love how much I help you? And I'm like, oh, cool. They're dead again. Yeah, thank you. Awesome. Really. You're such a green thumb. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you for drowning this plant.
Thanks for destroying these plants. I remember one building, where I took care of plants on, like, 15 different floors. And on one floor, every time I came in, the plants were always just miserable. They were somehow simultaneously had root rot from too much moisture and then also, like, dry, crispy leaves from being underwatered. Like, every time I came, they have these Sansevierias, which are mother-in-law's tongue, the spiky-looking ones, and I would literally have to, like, pluck rotted leaves out of those, and those are the hardest plants to kill, and when they finally do die and they rot, they smell exactly like vomit, so I would have to take, like, an extra 30 minutes to, like, pluck all this, like,
cool,
rotten plant mush out of these planters and then wash the vomit smell off of my hands, which is the only time I've ever seen that happen. I've literally never encountered somebody who can kill a Sansevieria, and there was no reason for them to be doing that badly. And every other plant in the office...
Just bad juju?
Yeah, completely, just bad juju. Every other plant in the office would always be miserable, even though it was the same conditions as every other floor.
Hmm.
And what I noticed is that the people in the office, it was one of those offices where even though there's like... It's like a room with maybe 150 people in it, almost always completely dead silent. And then every time I come in, at least like 20 desks that are either immediately being moved into or moved out of. Like always boxes with people's...
Yikes.
Like every sign of it being a terrible, terrible environment. And then like a few floors up, same light, same everything. But it's like the friendliest office that I go into. These people love these plants, and they always are talking to each other. There's always cheerful conversation happening in this office. Same floor plan, everything. Just different people, maybe a different supervisor, I don't know. Same building, same office plan.
Yeah.
Not only do these people seem to like each other, They love the plants. They tie their like bows tied around some of the planters.
Love it.
When I have to prune the plants every other visit or so because they aren't as likely to get root rot or whatever if you keep them cut back to a consistent size. And I'll go with my little like planter scissors to like trim these plants, and invariably somebody will pop out of a cubicle and be like, "No, no, please don't cut her. She's been growing so much. Look how big she is." And aww. I have to talk them into letting me prune the plant because they've grown so attached to it. And then they also have twice as many plants as every other office because they love them so much that they take cuttings and nice. they make new plants. So these offices they've become like jungles, and all the plants grow so fast that I have to prune them like every time I visit as opposed to once every like 6 weeks. And it's inexplicable. It's the same conditions. And these people, they're so nice to me. They always approach me. They always say hello. Whereas the other office, they like people will like walk past me when I'm waiting to be let in and close the door before I can follow them.
It's nice.
Like the only difference. Yeah, super, super chill of them. It's the only difference is the atmosphere and like the way the people interact with each other. And there's my little crazy person tangent about my job that I probably am fired from.
So if your plants are dying, it's because you're a bad person.
Maybe you're a bad person, or maybe you're not being kind enough to yourself and your home.
Yeah, got bad vibes.
Yeah, maybe there are some bad vibes that could be your fault, could be someone else's.
Could have a ghost.
Yeah, try singing.
Yeah.
But I really do believe her opinions on plants.
Yeah.
And then on family, Baba Vanja also has some other opinions. Mothers that didn't give birth are still mothers. If you are sterile, adopt a child. Raise him, educate him, ensure he gets married, and most of all, make him a good man. That is most important. Which, still a very traditional, like, heteronormative bad opinion overall, but for somebody born in 1911 in rural Bulgaria, mm-hmm. or whenever she was born, like, the idea that adoption is true parenthood was kind of ahead of her time.
Pretty good.
Especially for, like, a hyper-Christian, like, prophet voice. I feel like that's interesting. Like, some of her progressive views are interesting. She also hates money. She thinks money's really stupid.
Cool.
Yeah. On spirituality, she says, if you don't have a church nearby, the sky is also a church.
Yeah.
Thanks, Baba. And this one's really interesting. She says that the soul enters the body 21 days before birth.
So, okay.
Which is a pretty hot take, considering she is a biblical teacher.
Yeah, take that, pro-lifers. It's just goo until then.
It's goo until then. She says it enters the fetus at T-minus 21 days as a ray of spiritual light out of the sky.
Just straight into your vagina.
Straight into your, your parts. And that process is very complicated. Its failing is the cause of stillborns.
Mm.
So that was just, like, that's a very, like, left-field school of thought for somebody who's super biblical in their opinions and teachings.
I'm into it.
Yeah, I was surprised by that. This is just a small cross-section of many words attributed to Baba Vanja. The list goes on. But before ending the exhibit, some more details about her imperfect and fascinating human life. Particularly, I was intrigued by one story that seemed to have a couple versions. Remember the man who wed her after she solved the murder of his brother?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are other sides to that. By other accounts, she made a harsh deal with him. She would only reveal his brother's killer, the location of his brother's body, and the location of his brother's lost fortune, if he agreed to marry her.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
And so he did. According to her committee-approved official website, he had to leave his fiancée, Zoitsa, to wed her, and this plagued him with guilt. Zoitsa was reportedly very beautiful, and they were very much in love.
Bummer.
But look at your new wife with no eyes.
He was plagued with regret and died of alcoholism. The alcoholism part is objectively true. That is, he did die of cirrhosis of the liver. The rest is conjecture.
I might drink too if my partner was constantly throwing their head back and shouting prophecy. It might cause me to drink.
Yeah, that was what the more pro Bhavavanja sources said, was that he like had trouble with her spiritual lifestyle. But this one said that maybe it was because he was like strong-armed into marrying her against his will because he wanted to know who killed his brother and where his brother's inheritance was hidden.
Oh, whatever.
I found that really interesting, though. Like, just the fact that she scammed herself a husband.
I love it.
Whether this is true or not, it's good to remember that she was fully human. It's theorized both that she exploited the government forces that contacted her and that she was exploited by them. She may have been tipped off to give certain suggestions and prophecies to certain people. She was definitely paid by the state, but also accosted and scrutinized by it. She was said to be unfair to women, yelling at those who wanted advice on divorces and shooing them away. Some even claimed her to be a total fraud. She was nothing short of controversial. Here are two quotes from people outside her home when a New York Times journalist visited her in the last years of her life. "I came here once before," said one visitor, "many years ago, and everything she predicted for me came to pass. She told me that my mother's sickness could not be cured, and she was right. She said that my nephew had been murdered, and we found the body exactly where she told us to look. I absolutely believe everything she says. I adore her. She is a saint." Then, contrastingly, "Local people don't believe in her," said a peasant woman walking the streets of Petrick. This article was written in 1984, so.
still kind of harsh.
Still harsh for them. This podcast does not endorse describing people solely as peasant women. Unless you were talking about us, in which case that's very funny.
Yes.
If anybody is, like, ever doing, in the future, a write-up about this podcast for, like, Vice or some bullshit, please refer to its hosts as two peasant women.
Yes. Yeah, 100%. I sign off.
History and comedy podcast hosted by peasant women, Liz and Sam. "She just looks at you," the peasant woman said, "asks you what's wrong, and then repeats phrases that she has memorized. A lot of what she does is just for money, and the way she talks is vulgar. She uses words that no woman should use, especially not a godly person."
You're gonna die, bitch.
I know, like, I want to know more about that. There was one account that I didn't include in my notes. It was from, like, a neighbor of hers that was like, "Yeah, Baba was really funny. Sometimes she would make mean jokes about how she hated sluts." And it that was the word they used. It was sluts. Sometimes at the end of, like, a statement, Baba would just be like, "I don't know, though. I'm not some stupid slut." So, like, she might have been a little vulgar, which is, like, really funny to me.
Well, I like the idea of just being like, the spirits are telling me you're a real prostitute.
According to her gardener, Spaska Vangelova, she loved anise liquor and joked that it aided her readings. Yuck. That was the amber liquid on the table at the beginning of the tour.
Yuck.
Also alleges that she fostered a child for a few years and adopted another who later became a reputable prosecutor, which is interesting because a lot of sources say that she never had children. And she definitely never had biological children, but a few different sources say she had two adopted children. So
that seems checkable. That's wild.
Yeah, not within English sources. I'm sure there are Bulgarian sources that would clarify that. But it's weird how often, like, the opposite things, like, this completely contradicting statements were made on that. Another article that I had to translate from Bulgarian consists entirely of her neighbors defending her name and saying that her reputation has been used without her permission. They describe her as assertive but kind and someone who truly hated giving bad news. In her last few years, she had but two requests as preparation for leaving the world. Then in her village of Petrik, two things would be built: a new church, and a museum where her home was. You can visit either today, as well as the widely reputed healing springs that bubble up from the ground here, much like the small one you saw on your way into the artificial cottage.
Fun.
And let's talk about that church. It's a really weird church.
Yeah?
Which is up Liz's alley. I was so excited to tell Liz about this horrible nightmare church. The walls of the cottage light up with portraits of saints. Their faces are slack with detached agony. Their flesh is sallow and corpse-like.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
Fonges was, quote, an extremely unorthodox church. It was designed by one of Bulgaria's most daring experimental architects, ooh, Bogdan Tomalevsky, and looked nothing like any other Orthodox church looks. There are no domes, there is no gold, there is no altar, there's not even an alcove for praying. The only decorations on the bare, brutalist walls are boldly stylized portraits of saints by Svetlan Rusev, a Bulgarian painter known for his very, like, atypical religious art. I don't know how else to describe it. And these are two artists who she specifically requested, which is really interesting. She was like, no, I want these two nightmare freaks to build my demon church. I looked up his portrait paintings, and they literally look like death portraits.
Cool.
The figures are in some portions of the image hyper-realistic, and in others mm-hmm. blurred and smudged and disordered. And they're always gray and washed out, like they never have normal flesh tones. They're very fun. Beautiful and unsettling, and so fucking scary. Like, I love it. Are you looking at them, Svetlan Rusev?
Oh, field trip to Bulgaria. Just kidding. We're not allowed to leave the country.
Yeah, those are wild.
They're like an interesting choice to like. For church murals.
I love it.
And they're really beautiful.
I mean,
within a year,
they're very odd.
They're really odd for that context. Yeah. Within a year of its opening, the murals had to be retouched due to the thousands of kisses they received from devotees visiting the church.
That's fun.
Orthodox bishops at first refused to consecrate the church because it didn't conform to normal standards, but they eventually relented because they were unwilling to make an enemy of Vanja. Politicians, writers, actors, and diplomats, including Bulgaria's foreign minister and the Russian ambassador, were among the thousands who turned up for the consecration service.
Huh. It's pretty fun.
And before I end the exhibit, just for those who don't know, because I actually had to look this up to be sure about it, Baba Vanja's name, Baba is a Slavic term of endearment for older women and grandmothers, like Baba Yaga,
mm-hmm.
which I wasn't positive about that. And Vanja is a diminutive nickname for Vangelia.
Nice.
The exhibit ends when you move toward the door with an image of Baba Vanja herself projected into her favorite chair. She's old and hunched, but alert. Her hair is long and gray. She wears a delicately embroidered vest and shawl. She bids you adieu with these two quotes, attributed to a conversation between her and a worried relative. "Don't be afraid, son. It's not scary. There will be no Third World War. We are the product and fruit of extraterrestrial intelligence. There is no mother that will kill her child."
Huh. Okay. Thanks, Baba.
Thanks, Baba. Okay, so I have some Bulgarian slang.
Oh, okay.
Most of these are from a video, all of these are from a video interview with Nina Dobrev, who's like a famous actress.
Mm-hmm.
And according to YouTube, the only Bulgarian person on Earth. Because if you look up things about Bulgaria, it's just all interviews with her. I do not know who she is. She's very pretty.
I think she was on a vampire show. My high school ballroom dance teacher was on, like, Bulgarian American Idol. And was like, a teen sensation for playing guitar in Bulgaria.
Your what?
My high school ballroom dance teacher.
Wow.
Yeah.
This was a lot of ballroom woman? Dance.
No, it was a man.
A man. Was he from Bulgaria? Uh-huh. Huh. Did he have an accent?
Yeah.
Did it sound just like mine so far?
Yeah, it was yours is perfect. I do not remember his name. Only that he seemed fine when I refused to do anything he told me.
I do like that. Oh, I remember that. You did not participate in ballroom dance at all. I remember you telling me that.
Oh, no, I sometimes participated, but not in the way that he wished.
Yeah, you just stepped on people really hard until he let you stop, right?
Well, I'm 6 feet tall, so I was always a man in every dance, so I didn't have to do anything, basically, because there were no boys in the class. So,
oh, yeah, you just had to sort of, like, shift in a circle slowly.
Yeah, I just spun people. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So, in Bulgarian, bump and grind is barankarank. Hello, beautiful woman. You want to retire to bachelor pad for a little barankarank?
Oh, I don't... Okay. Great. Love it.
Dabe dabe is like, come on, give me a break. Like, dabe dabe dabe.
Okay, fun.
In Bulgaria, nodding your head, yes or no, is switched. Oh. Left to right is yes, and up and down is no.
That would be very confusing if you were visiting Bulgaria.
Gorgeous woman Nina Dobrev said it causes a lot of confusion and a lot of people thinking that they are not allowed to use restrooms.
Oh.
Because
people have to pee their pants in Bulgaria.
Yeah, somebody comes in and they're like, can I please use your bathroom? And some Bulgarian woman is like, da. And like shakes her head no, to our knowledge. Nuzdrave means cheers. Nuzdrave!
Yeah.
Kupan is party.
Fun.
Beautiful women come to my kupan for a little barankarank. And I say, Nuzdrave!
Oh my god, are you like from Bulgaria?
My entire knowledge of European culture is derived from the Steve Martin skit, Two Wild and Crazy Guys.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's 100% accurate.
The American foxes are come to our apartment for us to squeeze on their big American breast.
Yeah, that's what,
Neme previ selskin nomera means, don't play tricks on me, you little shit.
These are such specific phrases.
No, they're not useful. I made no claim to teaching you something useful, but aren't they fun?
Yeah, they are fun.
Neme previ selski nomera. Don't play tricks on me, you little shit.
I have a book of, like, how to speak German urgently if you're a British soldier in World War II. It's all phonetic, but all of its phrases are like, help me to dig a hole, or I've got a pain in my bowels. And I love it.
Tell my mother I love her.
Yes, exactly.
Also, this is just a fun fact about Baba that, I didn't know where to put it in, like, her life narrative. But, despite almost never bathing, she was reportedly always miraculously clean.
Love it.
I didn't know what to do with that, but I wanted to include it.
I like it. How do I get that skill? I hate bathing.
You do hate bathing.
I hate being wet. It's true.
Freak.
It's true. I just don't like it, okay? Okay. Well, I enjoyed all of that very much. I didn't know anything about Baba Vanja, like, at all. I'd never heard of her before you suggested it for this week. Yeah.
That's a wild one.
Okay, well, can I wrap us up this week on my cat story? We're going a little long this week, but I promise the story is like 100% worth it. And again, a story that I sincerely believe and is not a bit. So here's my cat story. So I have a cat named Bean who is plugged into the Dream Network. Like, I think he's like a Dream Wi-Fi hotspot because... every time if you fall asleep with him on you, you have, like, super crazy dreams. So I think he's, like, being, like, a hotspot for the Dream Network and putting them into your body. Yeah. And, like, sometimes if I have a really bad nightmare, he'll wake me up from it. and he does like dreaming rounds every night to come check that everyone's asleep and dreaming. And if you're still awake, it makes him really mad, and he gives you tiny kisses until you fall asleep.
Do the tiny kisses help?
No, he's a full grown cat, but he still tries to nurse on you. So he'll give you like little teeny tiny kisses, but like he's nursing.
So they don't make you like immediately fall unconscious.
No,
as if by some dark magic.
No, but I will fall asleep. But okay, so the other night I fell asleep. He was very mad. It was late at night, and I was still awake. So he climbed on top of me, and I pulled my duvet over him, which made him deliriously happy. And then I fell asleep, and he put like too much dream sauce into me. He put like his dream, but like I think the duvet like magnified his dream portal. Mm. And I ended up having an incredibly long dream following the entire crime career of a serial killer in the 1930s through the 1960s, where I could see everything that he was seeing and hear all of his thoughts until they gradually degraded into just barking animal sounds. And, like, it was really weird because, like, the more atrocities he committed, like, in the beginning, I was kind of, like, sympathetic for him and, like, understood why he was doing what he was doing. But then, like, the more inhuman he got, the less I could understand anything that he said, and it was just animal sounds.
It has some frightening realism to it.
Yeah. And it was very realistic, so we don't know if Bean accidentally time-traveled me or he, like, alternate dimensioned me through his dream powers. Mm. My new favorite thing to do is if he comes to me when I'm still laying in bed right when I wake up and I try to remember my dream, it gives him kind of double vision and he goes like, because he's still seeing my, you know, yeah. So I'm not going to do that again because I had a very frightening serial killer dream where he hurt many women in the 1930s and 40s.
Huh.
But it's because my cat does dream. But Maddie has another cat who lives in her neighborhood who's also on the dream Wi-Fi, because if she has nightmares, he'll appear in her window and make soft bird sounds and maintain direct eye contact as soon as she wakes up from nightmares. Just going like,
ew. Oh, it's so scary when cats do that.
Yeah.
They're like,
so that's my sincere belief that Bean operates in the dream field. He's very dozy and distracted because I think he can hear dream transmissions and he controls all the dreams in my house.
Yeah.
So please let us know if you know any dream cats, because I believe that.
Is your cat part of the Wi-Fi dream?
Yeah, is your cat a hotspot?
It's more likely than you think.
Again, this is something everyone in my household accepts completely, and Maddie also has experiences of with Butter, her cat's brother. Mm. So that's my story, is that I time traveled through dreams.
That's what y'all get for naming a cat Butter.
Butter. It's cornbread and butter. They're brothers. And their mom's name is Cowbell.
She likes to smack and hit.
Yeah. Okay, well, that was my story. Please let us know if you have cats on the Dream Network.
Yeah, that's a real invite. DM us. Email us.
Yeah, for sure.
Refer to us as poor peasant women.
Yeah. If you want to email us, our email is museumofthevanishingdog@gmail.com. We're on Instagram @vanishingdogs. I'm on Instagram @LizHamilton. It's Liz with two Z's. Sam's on Instagram @SamSketchbook.
Yes.
All our music was done by Greta Russell, which is @noise_wife on Instagram. And next week is my week, and I promise it will be very weird. So
I'm so excited.
I'm very excited. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Okay.
You are not long of this world.
Oh, bummer.
But many beautiful women will visit your home. Make Barakara.
Oh no.
You will die. You will die happy.